We're talking about governance best practice for successful accounting firms with Jeremy Clopton. Jeremy, you would think accountants have the best handle in the world on running something right because they're all about getting perfect results. Is that the case?
It sure seems like it should be, Rob, but what I find is that we're really good at helping everybody else run their business, but stepping back and looking at our firms like a business might be a little bit more challenging.
Well, the accountants listening would absolutely think that they're running things right. They run a tight ship. Governance is highest on the list of priorities. You talk to managing partners, leaders, accountants all the time. What evidence have you got that we should even be talking about best practice governance?
I would say that over the past 2 years, when I think about the various retreats, and I've probably done 2 to 3 dozen leadership retreats for partners of accounting firms, I think 90% of the agendas have hit governance. Everybody's trying to figure out what is it that we need to be doing. And it's because, in my view, so many firms are kind of coming into this realization that in order to get from where they are to where they want to be, they've got to start running it a little bit more like a business. And a lot of the firms that I work with, they're in that, oh, let's call it $10 to $40 million, size range, where they've got often between 3 to 30 partners. And there's a point at which you get several partners and we can't all sit around the table and make the decision as to what brand of coffee we're going to have in the coffee room anymore. And then here come the governments.
What font we've got on our website.
Exactly.
So when you look at decision-making in accounting firms, is that one of the pivot points of governance? Give us a little feel for the general discussions around governance and what's involved.
As we do that, say this, firms have got to start to differentiate between governance and operations. And that's a really, really important point, because if we don't differentiate, we feel like we've got a circular accountability model. It's a really kind of weird thing that we have. We've got all the partners in the firm come together to make decisions, select a managing partner, hold the managing partner accountable, and it's the managing partner's job to then hold all of the partners accountable for doing their jobs, who then hold the managing partner. So you can just see how this is a very circular, convoluted, how do we ever get anything done type of situation. So the very first thing in these conversations that I encourage folks to do is you've got to separate out governance from operations. And governance is decision-making at the highest level. And the day-to-day is not governance. Where are we buying the copy paper? That's not governance. Hiring and firing, that's not governance at the staff level, right? Selecting the managing partner and allowing new partners in, buying another firm, merging into a firm, those are governance-related decisions. And here's the thing. For most firms, they've got definitions about the governance decisions that need to be made. They're in the partnership agreement. They're in the operating agreement. They are codified somewhere. And it already spells out, here's exactly what the entire partner group has to decide upon. But so often we lose sight of that and think they have to decide on everything, not just the things that are stipulated.
Is it fair to say that the operational stuff is more tactical and the governance stuff is more strategic? Would that work?
It would. And that's generally the case, is we want, from an ideal standpoint, we want the partners coming together to decide strategic type level things. We don't need partners, the entire group. Let me state that again. We don't need the entire partner group coming together to make tactical decisions. That isn't the best use of anyone's time. We do want them coming together to talk about the strategy of the firm. Do they have a vision for the firm? What are the strategic objectives over the course of the next year, 3 years, 5 years? As you grow, the level of involvement, the number of partners that you have typically starts to stipulate how much of that the whole partner group is in on. And then as you get larger and larger, it starts to go perhaps to a board of the partner group. And that decision-making even becomes lesser and lesser as an individual partner because you have more layers. The big challenge, though, Rob, that firms are struggling with, and why I believe it's been such a common topic over the past 18, 24 months especially, is folks in our profession that become partners want to become entrepreneurs. In fact, I would argue that some of the best partners are some of the best entrepreneurs within the firm because they're builders. And they want to have a say in running the firm. The challenge is, as you grow, as you get more partners, you have to be willing to give up the autonomy in governance and or in the tactical things and only have a say in the governance side. And that's really hard. It is really hard to get partners to let go of being able to, as I refer to it, play the partner card and say, well, I'm a partner. I want it done this way. Therefore, you shall. And it's hard. I'm not going to even hide that. Act like it's easy.
How do you feel about the partnership model generally, Jeremy? We're emerging into an era where we're seeing more C-suite type corporate models in accounting firms. And some people even say the managing partner role is impossible because partners can't be managed. And it's so difficult to get consensus and hence make decisions about big strategic things. Where do you sit on that?
I believe that it's got to be a business model. I hesitate to use the term corporate just because of how much pushback there is. And accountants understand running the firm like a business. When accountants hear corporate, they feel like it takes away the people side of things and everything. You know, everybody becomes a number and it becomes very cold. And we're a warm industry, right? We're a people industry. We're a relationship-based industry. I don't think that changes. The structure on paper, and if we're real honest and I'm quite blunt about it, whether you're a corporation or a partnership or however, you know, from a tax code standpoint, you're, you know, categorized, that's on paper. And I've seen C-corps, accounting firms here in the U.S. that are C-corps that struggle with the same partner issues that an LLP does. Because what, no matter how you are organized on paper, most folks in our profession still feel like, as a partner, I should have a say in things. And even if it's a corporate structure, it's run like a partnership. And therein lies my issue, Rob. It is not how are you structured from a legal entity standpoint. And I'm not even qualified to provide insight and advice on that, so I won't. But how you run your firm should be like a business, no matter how you're set up from a legal entity standpoint. You should be running it like a business.
All partners are not equal, though, are they, Jeremy? There are so many political agendas, hidden agendas, ranking issues, seniority issues. I'm any more than you. I'm equity, you're salaried. All these things going on. So how could that ever work?
It's really hard to get it to ever work. But in the reality, that's a challenge no matter where you're at, right? Yeah. Anytime you have hierarchy, anytime you have that, it's an issue. Where it becomes the biggest issue, in my experience, is when people are paid based on how much they own rather than how they contribute to the firm's success. Compensation, of course, yeah. I hate to say it, it's the root of all evil in a lot of situations, but it's also the way that you're going to create the most, you know, the right behaviors. There's a great book out there called Gamed by Bernie Smith. And I was actually introduced to him in one of your accounting influencer roundtable groups, which, quick plug, Rob did not ask me to do this, but they're spectacular. You should join them. I've met many great people. But in his book Gamed, he talked about the idea that anytime you have metrics and KPIs and incentives tied to those, you've got a white hat those and you've got a black hat those. You got to say, in an ideal world, what does this create? But if I wanted to manipulate it, how could I abuse it? And you've got to design incentives and metrics that encourage the right behaviors. And right now, for most firms, their compensation at the partner level is actually what creates more problems than their legal entity or than whether your income and I'm equity or however it may be. It's because I'm getting paid to do the things that I'm doing. And if you change how I get paid, I'll do different things. I'll behave differently if you pay me to.
We'll talk about comp structures and pay setups another time, Jeremy. But what does governance best practice look like in the accounting firms that you see that really get it right?
The ones that really get it right have very clearly defined decision-making first at the partner level. And that is typically a very small number of things. The entire partner group will come together to make decisions on the following five things: admitting new partners, expelling a partner, buying another practice, merging into a practice, whatever it might, and into another firm, right? Very few things, electing the managing partner or the management committee. Those are full partner group decisions. Now, again, I'm talking $10 to $40 million firms, call it 7 to 37 partners, right? You get into the hundreds, it's a totally different ballgame. So we're not talking there. So you've got a very small list there. Then you go to the management committee, because a lot of firms that are in that 7 to 37 partner range, they aren't quite big enough to have a board and a management committee and then a manager. Like, we get too many layers, too many committees, just too much. So then you have a management committee. The management committee can make more decisions, right? There's another list of, say, 5 or 10 things that they are authorized to decide. It doesn't need to go to the whole board, but it's, or to the whole partner group, but it has been determined that it's more than just the managing partner's responsibility. So it's a little bit more, needs to go to a representative group of the board or of the partner group. Then you have the managing partner, and they have the authority to do everything else from a decision-making standpoint. That's the part that people really struggle with, is letting the managing partner then go do that. And here's where the governance versus operations offset occurs. Because at that point, now the managing partner is responsible for ensuring the partners are doing the work of the firm. That is operational. You don't get to play the partner card in the operational day-to-day. Right, you have partner on your business card, and that makes your business development efforts easier. And yes, you have seniority and hierarchy and all the things, but you don't get to play the partner card from an operational standpoint, because that is the responsibility of the managing partner, is to make those decisions. The thing is, as you grow and the firm becomes bigger, now the managing partner starts to say, okay, that's too many decisions for me individually. So I am going to delegate my authority to a COO or a CIO or a chief human resources officer or a CMO for the marketing side. I can't do it all, so I'm going to delegate my responsibility, right? Maybe I'm going to delegate some of the responsibility to the audit service leader, the tax service leader. Ultimately, though, that's the managing partner's call. They have a say in that, and they determine how that goes. And that's when you start to see that more corporate, as you referred to it, structure, right? The C-suites. As the firm gets bigger and they realize the highest and best use of the managing partner's time is not being human resources and marketing and IT and all these things, there need to be people that are responsible for that at the direction of the managing partner, who's tying it all back to vision and strategy and executing on that vision and strategy as set forth by the partner group.
I knew a demand, Jeremy, to come in and facilitate these, because they need that external objective viewpoint. They get so close to what they're doing that you can come in and see the wood from the trees, if you like.
Yes. And we do this quite a bit. There are a number of firms that we work with on a regular basis as it relates to resetting their governance structure, whether it, you know, and even as granular as, how do you do partner goal setting within that context? How do you get partners doing the right things? What are the decisions need to be made at every level? How do you start to delegate out to a C-suite? And, you know, the question that I often get in that, Rob, is, okay, well, when are we big enough to have that? When do you want to be big enough? Because I've seen firms that are 26 million still trying to figure out, do we need a full-time COO? And then I've seen a $6 million firm say, we're going to hire a full-time COO and we're going to become 26 million as a result. And they did. So governance, again, like so many things, is not one size fits all. And if anybody tells you it's off the shelf and plug and play, and here's this, you know, thing that you can buy that will just solve all your problems magic wand style, it doesn't work, because you've got to not only put in a structure, you've then got to sell it to all of your people and get them to buy into it. Because I don't care how well designed your governance structure is, if your partner group doesn't buy into it, it's useless. And it doesn't work.
Yeah. And when firms bring you in, not all of them, I would suspect, have a clear idea of why they're bringing you in. They know you help them out. They know you advise firms strategically. But often when you get in, I suppose you lift the hood up and look what's happening under the engine and you start to see what's working and what isn't. So there's a diagnosis element to what you're doing that they can't see for themselves.
Yeah, there is. And sometimes they'll say, hey, we know that we want to get from where we are to doubling in size and we don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
What do we need to change? And right, that then starts the process. And it's interviewing partners. It's, hey, what holds you back? Where do you feel like you're the most agile? How does decision-making work? Do you feel like you have a ton of autonomy or you operate in a silo, right? We've got a whole diagnostic set of questions that we go through that are designed to identify where are the glaring issues within a partner group. Sometimes it's trust and unity. And, you know, when I think about governance and operations, Rob, one of the things that I keep telling firms, and some of them get a little bit put off by it, but as you said, once they kind of step back and realize I'm coming in objectively and just sharing what I see, they're like, okay, maybe there's some truth to it, is you can either be running your firm like a business, or you can be running it as you got 9 partners as 9 different firms that all sit under the same roof and come together and meet regularly. And where you have silos, it really isn't running it like a business. It's running like separate businesses that come together. And there's a myth out there that when you embrace governance and you streamline the decision making, like we've talked about in this discussion, that partners lose autonomy. And I fundamentally disagree with that, because I believe that when you have decision making appropriately streamlined and clearly defined, it actually frees partners up to do what they are best at and contribute to their own and the firm's own success even more so, because they're not being pulled into all the trivial tactical stuff that they don't want to be in anyway. You've got to do a lot of communication to make them feel like they understand what's happening. Because in a governance scenario, one of the worst things that happens is you embrace a new governance model, you streamline decision-making, and then a partner finds something out from a senior about a decision that was made. That is very, very bad things happen, right? And so communication has to go up. And I know some firms will, ask me often, they're like, well, so if we're gonna do governance, we don't need as many partner meetings because they're not making as many decisions. And I will typically push back and say, no, initially you need more partner meetings because you've got to be communicating to the partner group what the decisions are so that they understand the decisions and they aren't caught off guard by a decision, because that is the very first thing that'll undermine the whole process, is partners feeling like they're out of the loop. Because they can get on board with, you make the decisions, but they don't want to find out about the decisions from somebody that's not a partner. And I understand that. They own part of the company. They should have an idea.
In the time we've got left, Jeremy, a couple more minutes, I want to ask you 2 questions. The first is, what are the warning signs or the red flags in a firm, the manifestations of poor governance?
Decision-making that is very slow and sluggish. Everybody knows that a decision needs to be made, but we're waiting on consensus to move forward. If you are making every decision by consensus and everybody has to be unanimous and in agreement and we can't move forward until everybody is on board, your governance is probably not working the way that it should. There's got to be a process to make decision-making. And you know it as well as anybody, Rob. As fast as things are changing in our profession right now, you can't wait 8 months to make a decision. Sometimes you can't wait 8 weeks or 8 days. You've got to have a process to make agile, adaptable decisions when you need to. And that is probably the biggest red flag, is slow decision-making or paralyzed decision-making. The other would be where you've got partners that are circumventing decisions that have been made. They're playing the partner card, is what I refer to it as. I said earlier, if you got people playing the partner card saying, I know we agreed to that, but I'm a partner and I can have it my way, it's not working.
Yeah, that's terrific. A few of our listeners and watchers will be identifying those in their own firms. So finally, leave us with some practical advice, Jeremy, for getting governance right or taking first steps to correcting governance that isn't perhaps aligned. Where would we start?
Easiest place is often to go to the partnership or the operating agreement and see what decisions by rule, need to be made by the entire partner group. Because if they're in the agreement, you can't change that, right? You'd have to go back and change the operating. You don't want to do that as a starting point. So figure out what has to be made by the partner group. Identify next, what would you be comfortable decision-wise being made by a selection of the partner group? So the management or the executive committee of the firm. And then get everybody on board with the fact that everything else is going to go to the managing partner. And figure out how to get information, then distribute it back to the partners, right? That's kind of the bare bones, the quickest way is improve communications about decision-making from the managing partner and the management committee back up to the whole partner group, but see what's required first. So often right now, it seems like, Rob, our default is every decision goes to the partners, when in all actuality, that's the opposite of how it should be. Everything should be done by the managing partner unless stipulated otherwise. And then figure out what are those stipulations.
We would say a check on the upstreamacademy.com website and a call into you guys would also help, Jeremy, before they get too close, drinking their own Kool-Aid. That's been terrific. Thanks so much for your passion and your insights today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob. I've enjoyed it.